How's everybody doing today? Even in the rain, we have a reason to praise, right? Because God has good plans. Well, how many of you struggle with, How many of you love guarantees in life? Everyone like guarantees? Like, we like to have a plan, right? I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I feel like I can be a little, like, I want to be in control of things a little too much, right? Even there's this commercial that comes on, and it's like a Sky Rizzy commercial, and like, what were the words, Billy? It's
Control means everything to me.
Have you guys heard that? And so like, it comes on all the time, and I've started singing it, and my husband looked over at me one day, and he was like, yeah, that's right. And so then the next day, like this week, I can't remember what it was. I text him about something with our kids, right? Because we do that when we're spouses. And he goes, Mandy, did you take your Sky Rizzy today? I was like, but we like to be in control of things, right? Okay, so like, I don't know about you guys, but I would love like a PDF or like an instruction manual or something to go along with, like, especially with parenting, right? Because kids, whew, we just don't know what we're doing, right? We're learning as we go. So every single kid's going to have counseling, I'm just going to say. Like, we're going to screw up some way, shape, or form or other. I wish God, you know, if a God could just say, Mandy, here's what I'm going to do. Here's step one. Here's step two. Here's what it's going to cost. Here's who you're going to meet. And here's exactly how things are going to turn out. I would be so excited. But you know what? That is not how life is. And honestly, sometimes we make decisions without knowing what they're going to produce. So Saturday mornings, we like to have breakfast with the kiddos, okay? And we take turns, and it's kind of like a silly schedule. We do slumber party nights on every Friday night. We have pizza, and we have a slumber party night with the kiddos. But our family has gotten so big because we have a lot of kids. We have five kids, y'all, and we can't all sleep on the couch anymore. So, like, we, like, switch, like, mom or dad gets to sleep on the bed, and one or two kids are in there, you know, and then we'll flop. And so the parent who sleeps in the bed has to make breakfast because the other person is sleeping on the uncomfortable couch. And so a few weeks ago, Billy, it was his turn to make breakfast, and we needed groceries, y'all, like really bad, okay? We were out of pretty much everything, but somehow he made it work. He's like, he finds it almost as a challenge. He's like, oh, we don't have ingredients? You're saying we need groceries? We have no food? Look in the cabinet. We have plenty of things. And so then he will like make up stuff. Sometimes it goes over great. Sometimes not so good. So like this day a couple weeks ago, he knows that I love coffee with my breakfast. Anybody here love coffee with their breakfast? Something about just holding that mug, it's just so comforting. I just love it, okay? And so he was trying to be really sweet because we had no milk, we had creamer, right? And so he decided to make up this concoction. And so some of the ingredients that he told me about, it was sour cream, cream cheese, and I don't know what else, sugar. It was interesting, but I kept drinking it because I didn't want to hurt his feelings, you know. But then when he asked me, I was like, oh, you know, it's okay. I never want to drink it again. But I really appreciate the effort that went into it, right? And so it's definitely funny how spouses can be. Because when I'm cooking, if I don't have the ingredients, and when I say, hey, Siri, what can you substitute for blah, 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 and I don't have that, I'm moving on. We're having something else. And so, but I want to tell you a funny story about a lady that happened to her, okay? Now, this lady, we're going to put her up on the screen. This lady's name, let me make sure I don't butcher, is Ruth Wakefield, okay? She invented the cookie. Did you guys notice it smelled chocolatey in here today? Yes, I was trying to set the mood. All right, so who loves a good chocolate chip cookie? Anybody? Yeah, right? They're so good. So one day, back in the 1930s, before any of you guys were even thought of yet, right, she was making chocolate cookies, but she ran out of the kind of chocolate that she normally used, so she did what we often do, and she improvised, right? So she got a chocolate bar, she broke it into pieces, and then she mixed it in the dough. And then she expected the chocolate to melt all into the cookies, but guess what? It didn't. And instead of the chocolate it being all melty, it stayed in chunks. And that's how the chocolate chip cookie was born. Are you guys grateful that she decided to improvise that day? Because really, that cookie, like, it revolutionized, like, desserts. Like, you can't think of, like, a cookie without thinking of a chocolate chip cookie, right? Like, it's the superior cookie of all the cookies. I mean, he's an oatmeal cookie guy, but me, I want my chocolate, right? Who likes chocolate cookies again? Oh, yes. Let me, I love it. Someone get him a cookie. But let me tell you guys something, though. That's sometimes what faith looks like. Faith isn't having the whole recipe before you start. Faith is trusting the one who does. So we want guarantees, but before we obey, we want God to give us the plan, the timeline, the budget, the outcome. But faith rarely works like that, right? Faith often sounds like, God, I don't know what's going to happen next, but I choose to trust you. We don't see everything is coming. We can't see the whole story, but we can know that God is enough to take that next step. And sometimes God isn't asking you to understand the whole story. He's asking you to trust him with the next page. And you know what's so funny? I've been using this little book. We gave these away at Mother's Day, I think, last year. It says, God is still writing your story. How cool is that, right? Because, like, we don't know the guarantee. Sorry, I just had to point that out because it's so pretty too, right? Well, enough about cookies. You came here to talk about God, right? We're here to learn. And so we're going to go back to the story of Hannah. So last week, when we talked about Hannah, we talked about how she had cried out to God because she wanted kids so badly, and she couldn't have them. And she was so distraught about it that she couldn't even eat. But then something happened in her, and God did a breakthrough. It didn't change the situation. She still couldn't have kids. But then all of a sudden, there was just this moment where she's like, you know what? I'm going to sweep off my feet. I'm going to go eat because I'm starving. And I'm going to trust in God. And so we're going to continue reading, and we're going to go a little bit in farther in today. So we're going to open our Bibles to 1 Samuel 9 through 11. And I'm going to give you a moment while I sip some water. And it's also on the karaoke machine up here. So on one occasion, Hannah got up after she ate and drank at Shiloh. The priest Eli was sitting on a chair by the doorpost of the Lord's temple. We read a little bit into this one last week, so this may seem a little familiar, but we're going to go a little farther in, okay? Deeply hurt, she prayed to the Lord and wept with many tears. And making a vow, she pleaded, Lord of armies, if you will take notice of your servant's affliction, remember and don't forget me. I will give your servant a son. I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life. And for some reason, she said, and I will never have his hair cut. Well, okay. But could you imagine dedicating, like saying, God, if you give me a baby, I'm going to give him back to you? Like, I don't know about you guys, but that would be really hard, right? She doesn't just ask God for a son. She makes a promise. If you give him to me, I'll give him back. That is wild faith. She's asking God for the very thing that she wants most, while at the same time placing it back in his hands. Hannah's saying, God, I trust you with the answer before I even know what the answer will be. And that is faith. Faith isn't pretending that there are no risks. Faith is deciding that God is trustworthy even when there are. So let's talk about the what ifs. What if God doesn't answer the way I want him to, right? What if I step out and I fail miserably? What if I give and I don't have enough? What if I forgive and I get hurt? What if I obey and it costs me something? We spend so much time trying to eliminate the what ifs, but maybe faith is eliminating the what ifs, and that trusting with God with your what ifs. So we're going to go a little bit further into 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 1:20 says, after some time, Hannah conceived and gave birth to a son, and she named him Samuel because she said, I requested him from the Lord. God answered. But Hannah had already decided, remember, before that moment, now this was the test. Am I going to like change my mind? Okay, God, you gave him to me. Now I'm going to pull back and say, nope, I'm not going to do it. No, she trusted him before the answer came. And that's what makes her faith so cool and so powerful. So now we're going to transition into our interview for today. So remember last week we had Miss Angela and she shared such an amazing story just about her life. And so I want to invite Miss Ashley Williams up today. I'm so excited to have her up here. And how long have you been going here now? I'm trying to remember.
Elijah's 9.
He was a baby, right?
Very little. 7. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. 7 years. Yes, 7 years. Oh, 7. We got to watch her get married, her kids grow up. It's been really cool walking this journey with her. But we've also had, you can have a seat. Here, I'll sit down too. So, but we've also gotten to see her go through a pretty rough time in her life, probably one of the hardest things she's ever had to go through in her life. And so, Ashley, I thought I'd have you share a little bit about that, about your story and about what happened, and then we'll start getting into the interview questions, okay?
Before we do that, I need to know, was the sour cream frothy or was it like blended in your
coffee? No, he made it frothy. Yeah, he put it in my frother. That's so funny. Yes, yes. You want to try it? I'll see if he can find it. And yeah.
I have to be dairy free, so, you know.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, it wouldn't work for you, would it?
No, it would not.
He will.
I'm sure they exist. I'm sure that they do. Well, I'm Ashley, obviously. I am a teacher, so I talk in front of kids all day, but not with a microphone. So if I pull it away, I'm so sorry. But about six years ago, my father committed suicide. I'm a crier, and I'm trying not to cry.
There's Kleenex.
Yes, I brought some right here too. He was an addict. You could probably name it, and he did the substance. Alcohol as well, and in and out of jail many times over my childhood. He was abusive, not physically necessarily, but emotionally. And then my sister and I have a younger sister, we had to watch this unfold. And as I grew up and I had kids, he was sober for about 5 years or so, which was phenomenal. He got to be a grandparent. And then he relapsed. And I had to make the difficult choice to pull away from that relationship and tell him that if he was not going to be a safe and sober person, my children, who I only had 3 at the time, we were not going to be a part of that. I didn't want my kids to have the worry that I had if my dad was going to come home, their grandpa, or if, you know, he would kill himself, because he had threatened it many times over my life. And every time we would end up in the ER, you know, the police would be there, and, you know, I would be there and I would fix it until the point that I could no longer sustain that relationship. And shortly after that, when he relapsed, he decided to take his own life. And then there was just a series of events after that, walking through the hospital with my sister, having to, we got to donate his organs to be able to save, I want to say, 5 other gentlemen's lives, which is phenomenal. And that was a hard decision as well. We got to do an honor walk through the hospital, so my sister and I held hands. And we got to say goodbye. And so the last 6 years, so we've just kind of been walking through that grief. As a family.
Yeah. I say it took a lot of faith for you to even take that step with your father and telling him that we needed to have some boundaries here, because I'm sure that was hard because you love him very much.
Yeah, when he was great, he was great, and he would give anybody the shirt off of his back. Many of you in this room have met him. He had started to come to church right around the time actually COVID happened, and we were in the parking lot. And even when we couldn't be together in our car, I would see his truck pull in. And so he was definitely seeking answers and trying to work through that pain, but ultimately those demons took him.
What made it feel so risky?
obviously we love our parents and wanting to have that relationship. And I wanted, you know, obviously I wanted my father around, and him being a grandparent was awesome to watch, since he couldn't be a dad necessarily. And so it was really hard to kind of walk away and not be able to have control as a teacher, right? I like to have a plan, and I like to know what we're doing when we're doing it. And so not being able to have control in that situation when he chose what he chose was really hard.
What were the biggest what ifs running through your mind?
When I got the call from my sister, because my phone had died, and I was actually at the Holden's house that night. My phone had died, and so I had no idea what was going on. He had called my sister, and so my sister unfortunately heard everything go down, and so she had tried to call me multiple times, and that still really bothers me that I wasn't able to answer for her. But just walking through that and not being able to have a solid answer, I think, is really hard, and not being able to fix the situation.
Yeah. Was there a moment when you wanted to give up?
Yes, grief. Grief is strange, and grief is still a part of my story. You know, there's not a day that I don't think about my dad and the kids. And unfortunately, two of my kids, Mason and Haley, never got to meet my dad.
Sorry. No. Good.
But there was a point when I had cut my dad off. Other family members and my sister were like, just give him a chance. And unfortunately, just praying through it and talking to God, I didn't think that that was a safe, wasn't a safe situation. And so I, in a way, I almost reached out. And so part of that is really hard for me too, not knowing that I couldn't necessarily say goodbye. But I also was wondering, like, God, why is this a part of my story? Why is all of this pain a part of my story? Why, like, I just kind of wanted to step back out of it and not have to deal with it.
What helped you finally say yes?
Walking, God was in every part of that situation when I look back now. Obviously, in the midst of it, it's really hard to deal with everything that's happening, and not necessarily, not just be in that situation, but also be, I was a single mom at the time, and so having little kids and trying to parent, and thankfully my mom was phenomenal and helped with my kids and everything, but having to do all of these different roles at that time was really hard. But I was just praying in that hospital and saying, okay, God, I have to trust you. I don't understand why this is happening, why I am the one to have to walk through this. Why are you kind of, you know, everybody talks about generational, like, trauma and curses and things like that, and having it stopped. There was a lot of the time I was like, why did you pick me, God? Why? This is too much. I couldn't do it, but I, in the end, controlled where I placed my heart with the situation. And so I ultimately decided to place it in God's hands, no matter what was going to be the outcome.
That's good. Did everything work out the way you expected?
Not at all. Usually never does. My whole life, you know, I had prayed that even when I didn't know God the way that I do now, I'd prayed and asked that my dad would be clean and sober, that he would be the father that I needed, and eventually the grandpa, that he would choose his family over those substances. You know, I prayed that he would restore his life. And him ultimately taking his life was never really on my radar, even though he had threatened it so many times before. It's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. Mm-hmm. He had threatened it dozens of times. And so it really was kind of just like this cycle to me of like, okay, this sounds bad, but he's throwing a temper tantrum, and, you know, we'll move on from here. So it really wasn't on my radar.
Yeah. What did you learn about God through taking that step?
I learned that God is good. I knew that God was good, but really being in that situation and have people, not just the Holdens, come alongside, but everybody in the church and the people that were in the hospital, the nurses, the doctors, like, Some of them were even connected to my family in ways that I didn't know. And I was like, okay, God, I see you. And so he knew the things that I needed to learn in that season. God really did. And he knew my heart towards my dad. I obviously struggled with people and choosing substances for a very long time. And walking through that, I learned so much about my dad and his family history. After he passed away, I learned, we found letters at his house about how he wished he had been a better father.
I'm sure that was hard.
To my sister and I, a better husband, to my mom, and to all the people around him, I learned about the spiritual abuse, physical abuse as a kid, sexual abuse as a child. And while I don't condone the choices that he made it kind of almost gave a reason as to why that he felt the way that he did, and he was really trying to mask the pain that he himself hadn't dealt with.
Yeah, it gives you a deeper understanding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, the last question I have for you is, what would you say to somebody who knows what God is asking them to do but is still afraid?
Faith is not an absence of fear. In the hospital the night before we took him off of life support, we obviously had prayed over my dad. My sister and I prayed. And while I was very scared in that moment to really finally say goodbye to my dad, we had known for days that he was not going to live, that there was no brain function. I am grateful that they were able to restart his heart so we could donate his organs, and that was all God, because it happened in the most perfect timing and the amount of minutes that it needs to happen for those things to be able to be donated. But sometimes faith is taking one trembling step while you are scared. In my grief, I've learned, like I said, so much about my dad and substance abuse. I learned about all of the people that my dad had impacted that I didn't even know that he had impacted with his story. Like I said, I learned that he was abused a lot, and I didn't know the extent of that, and so it kind of gave me a new perspective. I learned about the weight that he was carrying. He owned his own construction company, and he was in a lot of debt. And so he was really struggling, and I didn't fully know to that extent, like I talked about. He inflicted so much pain, but I was able to forgive him and give it to God. It's not my pain to carry that he was inflicting on us. And so it gave me a heart of grace towards my dad, and it helped me heal the anger that I was carrying, that he would put that on my sister and I to walk through those steps and my family. So I would say, if God is asking you to surrender something as extreme as this or anything small, I would say just release it to him. Talk to him about it. Give it to him. He is a good father, and he will carry it with us. No matter your pain, the situation that you're walking through, God will find a way to help you. God never left me in the mess. He showed me how to heal through it and how to help others in their mess. Through this journey of healing and grief, I've been able to talk to other people about substance abuse, others who have struggled with suicide and wanting to not be here, and I was able to share those things with them. I praised God for that time, and I still do now, looking back. While I wish my dad was here, it's a part of my story. It's a part of my testimony to share that with people. And his story, he was able to save those lives with others. And while I miss my dad and I wish that God would allow him to be here so I could speak to him, I know that God's using this story. I know that he has called me to change my generational line. And I know that is a tall order and very scary sometimes. But I know that God has allowed me to be here for such a time as this.
So good. Can you guys give her a hand? Thank you. Some of you are waiting for certainty before you obey. But if you had certainty, then you wouldn't need faith. You may not know how it ends. You may not know where the resources come from. You may not know what happens next. But you do know the who that is going with you. Faith is trusting God with those what ifs. So I have a question for you guys. What is one faith step or promise that you need to make to God today? Not someday. Not when everything makes sense. Not when the risk disappears. But the today. What is your next yes? And I encourage you to tell somebody what that step of faith is. You can write it on the Connect card like we did last week. You can give it to somebody to have as an accountability partner. You can bring it up here if you feel like that's what you need to do. This morning, we were praying over all the Connect cards from last week, and we were praying over a lot of you in this room because we believe that God has more for you. And so sometimes we need to be accountable so that we can propel forward. So what is that step of faith that you need to take today?